Mail Order Massacres. Just add water. Tuckerville, New York, 1980. When everything was said and done, and the dead were long buried, they would blame Wonder Woman. While everyone else collected Star Wars, the red, yellow, blue, and green series, and baseball cards, Patrick Richards and David Estrada plunked every hard-earned nickel they had on comic books. Oh, and there were also the protective plastic bags they had to buy to keep each issue as pristine as possible. Their habit was expensive, but the 13-year-old best friends found ways to scrape together enough money every month to buy the latest issues of the Fantastic Four, Captain America, The Flash, Marvel 2-in-1, featuring The Thing and a different guest hero each issue, Green Arrow, and too many others to count. Well, they could count them. In fact, each could rattle off the total number of comics in their collection at a moment's notice.
325,
Patrick would say.
402,
David would say, showing off just a bit. Patrick had a paper out while David mowed lawns for the older people in the neighborhood. Sometimes they would wait outside the Shopwell supermarket, offering to load people's bags into their cars for tips. An afternoon at Shopwell could net them enough scratch to buy four or more comics. And there was always shoveling to be done in the winter, along with raking leaves in the fall. When you had a comic addiction, you had to find ways to feed the beast. They found themselves in late May flush with cash, thanks to a visit from Patrick's grandparents. His grandfather had slipped a $20 bill into Patrick's pocket, whispering in his ear,
"Don't tell your parents. That's comic book money. Get enough to last the summer."
"You're really gonna share?"
David stared at the 20 on the floor between them.
"It's not like we don't read the same comics. The deal is, I get to add more to my collection. Say we split it 70-30?
I'll take it."
They shook, and it was done. The four-block ride to Blackburn Stationery Store had both in a sweat. Summer had come early. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, and the sun was downright brutal. Popping tandem wheelies, they leaped off their bikes at the entrance, both riderless Huffies crashing to the ground in a tangle of metal and rubber. Blackburns kept the comics in a long rectangular box on the floor under the magazine rack. The boys got on their knees, carefully rifling through the upright stack.
"We have everything."
David's short-cut black hair glistened with drops of sweat. They'd been sorting through the comics for a while.
"Almost."
Patrick plucked a Wonder Woman free. His own face was flushed, bringing the cluster of freckles on his cheeks to blazing prominence.
"It's better than nothing."
They paid 40 cents for the issue, getting a ton of change that somehow made it seem like they had more money than they had started with. The boys jumped back on their bikes and pedaled home, anxious to get back to David's room because it had an air conditioner. David read along with Patrick, just over his shoulder. Neither was a Wonder Woman aficionado, but neither could argue against the fact that she had one sexy bod. Sexy for a comic book character. Not as hot as, say, Mrs. Pendleton, freshly divorced and constantly on the prowl. The boys appreciated how difficult she made it for any straight male to not stare at her bulging rack or curvy hips. They were done in 5 minutes.
"Well, that was exciting."
David rolled onto his back.
"It would have made more sense if we read the previous two issues."
Patrick flipped through it again. They'd decided they weren't going to preserve this one. Wonder Woman just didn't make the cut for a special bag treatment. He perused the endless ads for gag gifts, magic kits, bodybuilding guides, and footlockers filled with 1,000 army men. His eyes paused on the all-too-familiar ad for the Amazing Sea Serpents. In the ad, a smiling family of creatures that looked like a cross between mermaids and anacondas with almost human faces waved back at him from the comfort of their underwater city.
"Sea serpents make the ultimate pet. No mess, low maintenance, just add water and let the fun begin."
Patrick had always wanted to order the Amazing Sea Serpents, but his parents absolutely forbid him. In their words, wasting his money on worthless junk.
"All that stuff is a scam,"
his father had once said.
"When I was a kid, I ordered what was supposed to be a working rocket that could break the atmosphere. What I got was a balsa wood stick and a big rubber band."
But that was in the old days. There were laws and stuff now about scams like that. If it was in a comic book, it had to be tested and approved. Stan Lee would never pull one over their eyes. Excelsior.
We should order the Amazing Sea Serpents.
David had his eyes closed, his hands clasped behind his head.
Huh?
They only cost $4.95. You get the serpents, their tank, and everything.
Now David sat up. He'd wanted his own for a long time, too. But his parents felt the same way about the whole business as Patrick's.
We have the money, and even after that, we still have $14 for the new comics when they come in.
What about our parents?
Oh, we don't have to tell them. It says it takes 6 weeks for delivery. It'll be summer vacation by then. My mom and dad will be at work by 8 every morning. I'll be the only one home when the serpents come in the mail. We can set them up in your basement.
David's basement had been a downstairs apartment until the tenants had moved out months earlier. Until his family found new ones, the place was all theirs. Most of the time, they just read comics on the overstuffed couch that had been left behind, eating from brown bags filled with chewy Swedish fish.
I'll get an envelope.
David ran to the dining room. Patrick found a pair of scissors and cut out the ad. He would never take scissors to X-Men or Spider-Man. At least this way, Wonder Woman was serving a noble purpose. He filled out the order form, and David sealed it in the envelope along with a $5 bill. Licking the stamp. They were going to be out a nickel, but what did it matter?
I can't wait to see what they look like. I bet they won't be as boring as all those betta fish we've had.
On his way home up the street, Patrick dropped it in the mailbox. 6 weeks couldn't come fast enough. Nothing was better than the first day of summer vacation. Nothing, that is, until Patrick checked the mail and saw the box with a return address from the Bakura Corporation. That's where the Amazing Sea Serpents came from. It took all his willpower not to tear the box open, but he'd promised to wait to do it with David. He was now sprinting to David's house with a box under his arm. The box was awful small. In the ad, it looked like the Amazing Sea Serpents lived in this huge tank, surrounded by a veritable underwater metropolis. Whatever was in the box would barely be enough room for a baby hamster to bop around.
David!
He shouted through the screen door.
Oh, hey, Patrick.
David's mother stepped into the hallway.
Come in. David's in his room.
Thanks, Mrs. Estrada.
You want something for breakfast? I just made pancakes.
That's okay. I just ate 3 cinnamon Pop-Tarts.
He didn't bother knocking on the door. David was sound asleep in his room. It was as cold as a walk-in freezer.
Wake up, lazy ass.
What the heck are you doing in my room?
Look what I got in the mail just now.
He held the box over his face. David rubbed his eyes and sat up.
Oh, damn. I almost forgot about him.
Come on, get dressed so we can put it all together.
They set up shop in the kitchen of the downstairs apartment, taking turns tearing the brown wrapper and slicing open the box. They carefully extracted the diminutive oblong plastic tank. Inside it were 2 packets and a bottle that looked like something eye drops would come in. There was a small radio on the windowsill. Patrick turned it on while David shook the box. A folded up paper landed in his palm.
Nope.
All the directions are in Chinese or something.
We don't need them. The steps are written on the bottle and packets.
The bottle was the water conditioner. David read the superfine print on the back of it.
It says you have to fill the sea serpent home with tepid water.
What the heck is tepid water?
It can't mean hot or cold. Wouldn't that kill the sea serpents?
Maybe it's a special kind of water. You ever see tepid water at the store?
We'll just add room temperature water. It works for regular fish.
If you say so. You better not kill them before they've had a chance to hatch or grow or whatever they do.
Patrick pinched one of the packets between his thumb and forefinger.
Amazing sea serpents. How the heck can sea serpents be in here?
He shook the packet.
They're supposed to grow when they hit the water, Bozak.
David had the water all the way to the fill line.
Now, I have to add 3 drops to the water and we wait 10 minutes.
The other packet was labeled food. There didn't seem to be much of it. If these things were going to grow to look like they did in the comics, surely they'd need more than that. Patrick was beginning to feel that his parents were right. When it was time to open the sea serpent pack, he was dubious at best.
What the hell?
Patrick emptied the contents, tiny granules that looked like dark sand pebbles, into the tank. They floated for a moment, then sank lazily to the bottom.
Well, there goes the serpent dust.
There's no way those things are gonna grow into sea serpents.
They look more like fish food, not fish.
Patrick read the food packet, opening a corner and spilling some into the palm of his hand. The red flakes, each so small it could fit in the groove of a fingerprint, smelled like low tide at Orchard Beach.
It says we don't feed them until they've had a week to grow.
That reeks! Wash your hands, man. I don't think we're gonna have anything in a week to feed.
Patrick scrubbed his hands clean. The boys knelt close to the tank, watching the little black balls sit motionless.
You think we got ripped off?
I don't know. I hope not. Look, we'll just leave them here and check on them every day. Maybe they'll surprise us.
Where's the city they're supposed to live in? I thought we'd get at least some little buildings and stuff.
Maybe once they grow, they'll build it themselves. Come on, let's go see if Mike will let us in his pool.
The amazing sea serpents were left on the drain board, but were never far from their mines. To their amazement, life did spring from the packet of serpent dust. It just wasn't anywhere near what they thought it would be. Within 5 days, there were a half dozen wriggling gray spermy things swimming around. They were a far cry from the smiling, amazing sea serpents in the comics.
Maybe they'll get a lot bigger once we start feeding them.
Let's just feed them now.
It says we have to wait 7 days.
David unfolded the corner of the food packet and sprinkled half in the tank. The rank odor made them both back away.
There. Now let's see how fast they grow.
I hope they smell better when they're bigger.
The fledgling sea serpents didn't rise to the top to get at the food. They just kept pulsating in the water, ignorant to the bounty above them.
I guess those are the dead ones.
Patrick pointed to all the black balls of sludge at the bottom. Oddly enough, the dead ones were bigger than the living specks.
Or maybe they're sea serpent shit. Get one on your finger and smell it.
You sniff sea serpent shit!
No freaking way! If it smells as bad as the food, I'll throw up!
If it smells as bad as your farts, I'll throw up too!
Baseball camp started for the boys, and it was 5 days before they checked on the sea serpents again. The second they entered the kitchen, they stopped dead in their kids.
Whoa, it smells like your mother's cabbage!
Or a dead mouse! Jeez!
The closer they got to the sea serpent tank, the more they realized exactly where the stench was coming from.
Well, that's interesting.
David picked the tank up, bringing it close to his face while pinching his nose shut. Some of the water had evaporated. It was getting so murky they could barely see the living sea serpents.
Only three left, and they're the same size as they were last week. I can't believe our parents were right.
Yeah, but look at this.
David pointed to the bottom of the serpent tank. It was filled with the black sludge balls. They had tripled in size.
Their shit keeps growing.
They're just absorbing the water, I think.
Patrick had tucked the collar of his shirt over his nose to filter out the heady sea serpent aroma.
We gotta get these things out of here. If my mother or father come down here and smell this, they're gonna kill me.
Should we flush them?
Patrick felt bad about killing the three sea serpents that had survived, but not bad enough to stop David.
And what if the toilet backs up? Then they'll be all over the floor. I have a better idea.
Patrick followed David out of the house. They marched down the block, stopping above the sewer grate on the corner. This was the same sewer they fished tennis and wiffle balls out of with coat hangers. The balls covered in muck, but good enough to play with after a thorough soaking in a bucket of hot water and laundry detergent. All of the fathers also used the sewer to dump used motor oil, old chemical stuff for their lawns and gardens, and basically anything gross and liquid they wanted to get rid of. It was a fitting resting place for the boys' first bitter disappointment in U.S. commerce.
You want to say a few words?
So long, amazing sea serpents. It was smelly and nasty while it lasted.
The grimy water, sea serpents and sludge balls splashing across the iron grate, pouring through the holes and disappearing into the dark sewer.
Let's put the tank in Ernie's garbage. I'm sure that old crank will appreciate the stink.
Good one.
Ernie was the neighborhood asshole, a man bent on making the lives of every child miserable by chasing them off his sidewalk and even attempting to prevent them from walking in the street by his house. They snuck to the side of his house and quietly stuck the tank in one of his pristine metal garbage pails. There were several paper bags of trash inside. David hid the tank between two of the bags. Sprinting away from their dirty deed, they ducked into Patrick's yard.
No more buying stuff from comics.
And no more Wonder Woman.
Five houses down, in the cloying humidity of the sewer, the remains of the amazing sea serpents seeped into a coagulated mass of muck. A blue tendril of smoke twisted down the tunnel. A wet and ragged rat out for an afternoon of foraging skittered headlong into the smoke. Its body went rigid. It turned and ran as far away from the source of the smoke as it could. Food could wait.
Time out!
Patrick waved his arms in the air.
What for?
His friend Alan stopped where he was with the bat still in his hand. He was midway between home plate, a chalk outline in the street, and first base, Mr. Arthur's yellow Chevy Nova.
The ball went down the sewer!
Ground rule double.
Man, that would have been a home run. Patrick would have never been able to get it back in time.
A rule's a rule.
David looked at Patrick, who was four houses away.
You want me to get a coat hanger?
Patrick stood over the sewer. It smelled worse than usual, but it was a hot summer day.
I don't know.
For some reason, he didn't want to get the ball. He kept thinking of the sea serpents and that awful funk. There was no way he was going to touch any ball that came in contact with it. Instead, he ran to his house.
I have a tube of new tennis balls. I'll go get them.
Patrick's alien voice thundered down the sewer. The black wads of snot from the amazing sea serpent's tank were no longer lifeless balls. In the weeks since their unceremonious dumping into the melange of waste, they'd sprouted legs and arms and the beginnings of tails. Far from serpents, they resembled a kind of bipedal polywog. The polywogs rolled in the mire, feeding off of it, growing more and more each day. When the ball slipped into the sewer, it crushed one of the polywogs flat. The thing exploded. The moment the ball rolled away, the other polywogs descended on their fallen brother, devouring its inky remains with their oval mouths filled with tiny points. Food was food, and lately, they'd been getting very hungry. It took only a few days for the rats to be fair game for their carnivorous desires. The sea serpents grew exponentially. They needed meat, and there were more than enough rats scampering around the old pipes and pathways. And scamper they did. More like ran for their lives. If anyone would have listened, they would have heard the cries of rats darting into every tight nook and crevice they could find, desperate to get away from the new alpha beasts in the sewer. The sea serpents, now the size of cats, weren't necessarily fast, but they worked together. They set traps. While a few scared up a nest of rats, driving them down a long, dark tunnel, the rest waited at the other end, ready to feast. With each day, each meal, the sea serpents grew bigger, taller, deadlier. Their teeth sharpened, and once gelatinous stumps at the end of their slimy arms morphed into savage claws. By the time they cleared the sewer of the entire rat population, they'd evolved into child-sized animals with the appetites of hyenas. They sensed they must leave the safety of their dank, rotten home. Their instinct for survival fueled their fervent appetite. When night fell, the sunless sky resembled their dwelling enough for them to skulk from the sewer, the heavy manhole cover an obstacle easily removed. Martin Henderson's black cat Asphalt peered at the emerging shapes from what it thought was the safety of a row of azalea bushes. It knew these creatures weren't like other bugs it had chased. Asphalt didn't detect the sea serpent at its back before it was too late. The black cat's tail was pierced by a razor-like talon, rooting it to its hiding spot. Little did it know, its cries were nothing more than a dinner bell for the sea serpents. It was over 90 degrees, and there was nary a lick of shade outside Shopwell. As much as David and Patrick would have liked to go swimming, they know hot days are the best ones to make money. On days like this, shoppers, especially old people, wanted all the help they could get with their bags. It was paying off. Their pockets were full to bursting with quarters.
We could go to the Kendall tomorrow and see that Godzilla double feature.
Patrick counted out his quarters on the lid of a trash can.
I've almost got $5 already.
And we'll still have plenty left over for the new Moon Knight and Batman.
Patrick sensed a return of their old debate about which of the two was the better superhero. Moon Knight being Marvel Comics' answer to the ever-popular Batman. But David looked too tired to fight. They were both sweating up a storm.
Excuse me, would you boys do me a favor?
An older woman wearing bright red lipstick and so much rouge on her cheeks she looked like a clown stood behind them holding a sheaf of papers in her trembling hands. David looked around, searching for some bags or a shopping cart.
I was wondering if you could post these signs for me. I tried, but I'm just not up to it. I'll give you each a dollar.
Sure, we'd be happy to help.
Thank you so much. Here, you can use these.
She handed Patrick a box of thumbtacks. David looked at the top flyer. It had a picture of a white Yorkie with the word missing printed above. The dog's name was Reggie, and it had gone missing 2 days ago. The flyer listed a number to call if anyone found Reggie, along with the promise of a reward. There were tears in the old lady's eyes.
I miss him so much. But my heart isn't made for this kind of heat.
Oh, I hope someone finds your dog.
She patted his head.
You keep your eyes out, too. You're such nice boys. If I'm going to reward anyone, I hope it's you.
She slowly tottered to her car, which had been parked in the yellow loading zone.
We should put one on the bulletin board inside the store.
And cool off for a minute. Yeah!
They walked in the outdoor. The big cork board was chock full of papers, and most of them were notices of missing cats and dogs. Little Reggie was just one among many. The boys were at the police to find people's cherished pets until the manager shooed them away.
I don't mind your little enterprise outside, boys, but I can't have you clogging up the exit.
They left without protest, the heat smacking them in the face.
What? Did someone go around stealing everyone's pets?
I don't know. Come on, let's stick these on some poles.
For 13-year-old boys, reality is what they make of their own little world. For David and Patrick, that reality revolved around comics, movies, baseball, and swimming. Neither had been aware of the preponderance of missing cat and dog posters popping up all around town the past week. Desperate notices to find lost dogs have been stapled over sad stories of a little girl's cat, Sabrina, that had gone out one day and never returned. It seemed as if there were more missing pets than ones actually safe at home.
This is crazy.
Way crazy.
True to their word, and because they wanted to earn that dollar, they found the few bare spots left to put up missing Reggie flyers. It left them uneasy, at least until they turned for home and started talking about the Godzilla movies they were going to see the next day.
You smell that?
They had just turned the corner to their block.
Whoever smelt it, dealt it.
If I beefed like that, call a doctor.
They saw the old jerk Ernie walking away from them, holding a can of something. Thank God he didn't see them. He tried to tell them he'd bought the sidewalk rights from the city again and order them off it.
Maybe Ernie finally cleaned out that garbage can.
Patrick had forgotten they'd hidden the sea serpent tank in his garbage. He hoped the smell made Ernie sick.
Oh yeah, I bet that made his day.
They high-fived, agreeing to get Alan, Chris, Mike, and Jimmy together for a post-dinner wiffle ball tournament. They also decided to do a little searching for cats and dogs every day. The reward money paid a lot more than hauling bags outside Shopwell or cutting lawns. Everyone's loss would definitely be their gain.
Welcome to Rome. And you know what they say when you're there.
Robert Court was addressing Bill and Annie Baxter. He held a wooden bowl in his hands. Bill dropped his keys in the bowl, even though his car was still in the garage around the block.
You really went all out tonight.
Bill took in the decorated yard. Torches lighted the rectangular patch of property, casting a warm glow. Roman columns made of cardboard and expertly painted were tacked over the doorway to the house. Bowls of grapes and metal goblets of wine were everywhere. The partiers wore togas, and from what Bill could see when Robert's wife, Phyllis, bent over to pick something up off the floor, little else. For a woman who had 3 kids, she had an amazing ass.
No pressure when it's your turn.
Robert put the full bowl down.
We'll just hire Phyllis to put it together.
Phyllis ran a local theater, so she had the skills and access to a ton of props.
You know me. Here, put one of these on.
Robert offered them some togas.
I don't mind sharing.
These key parties had been Robert's idea 2 summers ago. Bill thought his neighbor had lost his mind, but when word got around after the first party about what a hit it had been, he'd convinced Annie to at least go to one. She didn't have to do anything if she didn't want to. That was 2 years and over a dozen parties ago. He and Annie were old pros by now. Sure, there was still a nervous edge when they walked in, but a little wine and a joint or two helped smooth things out.
Full house tonight.
All of the regulars were there, including a new couple. They were younger than most. The wife, with radiant red hair and an impressive chest, her hard nipples straining the fabric of the toga. Bill hoped he'd pull her key tonight. He'd had everyone else at the party before. It would be nice to try something new. Annie was eyeballing the husband, too. This could be a very good night, he thought. And the best part was the sex after the party. He and Annie boinked like teenagers for months after a key party. Each new encounter was a time-release aphrodisiac.
I don't see the Estradas.
They called and said they couldn't make it. George has a stomach thing. Next time. Now get changed, and I'll pour you some wine.
They walked into the kitchen. There were more bottles of booze on the counter than a proper British tavern. Bill added a bottle of wild turkey to the collection. Well-versed with the process, they went to the spare bedroom off the kitchen, stripped down, folded their clothes neatly, and placed them next to other stacks of regular clothes.
Come here.
Bill pressed his body against Annie, his hands gravitating to her ass. He could feel the heat of her on his growing cock.
We better save it for later.
Annie broke off their embrace with a devilish smile. She slipped into her toga, the hem barely covering the bottom swell of her cheeks.
And then even later, when we get home.
And no showering. I want to taste her on you.
Bill's heart fluttered. He'd heard of endless horror stories about swapping. Real life couldn't be further from the truth. Or at least their real life.
Hail Caesar.
Bill swooped his wife into his arms.
Stop it! Put me down, you brute!
They exited the spare bedroom.
They're getting rowdy early.
Or we're just getting a late start.
Bill stopped in the kitchen to pour a shot of good scotch and downed it. Mitchell McGrath always brought the high-end stuff. He should. He owned the liquor store on Virginia Avenue.
What the fuck?
I wonder if that's the new guy. He might not understand how things work.
The bottle slipped from his hand and it landed on top of Annie's bare foot. She hopped around the kitchen on one foot.
I think you broke my foot.
He didn't have time to console her. Their neighbors tried to cram their way through the narrow sliding glass door. In their excitement, they attempted to get in the house in one big pile. Instead, their bodies wedged in the doorway. It looked like something from a Three Stooges movie.
What the hell's going on?
He saw Robert's face, and his stomach dropped to his balls. His neighbor was covered in blood. There was a long, ragged gash down the center of his face. His nose was split in half like a bowling alley hot dog.
Oh my God!
As people popped free from the bottleneck, spilling onto the linoleum floor, Bill and Annie could see what was behind the roiling panic. Black alien bodies reflecting the torchlight. To Bill, they looked like oil slicks come to life. Some were feasting on their friends, togas drenched in gore, hearts that should be inside now outside. The black beast, not much taller than a 10-year-old kid, pounced on the back of the people to the rear of the bottleneck. Geysers of blood shot straight into the air.
We have to get the hell out of here.
I can't walk!
Bill swept her off her feet again, carrying her close to his chest. Someone hit him from behind, driving him to his knees.
No, please! No! No!
The damn things were in the house. In the bright light, Bill could make them out better, and wished he couldn't. Bulbous heads that were seemingly all mouth sat atop almost human bodies, with the exception of a thick tail that raked back and forth, knocking people's legs out from under them. As soon as someone went down, another beast was quick to chop at the softest parts of their exposed flesh.
The front door!
He had to get to the front. All of the creatures appeared to be coming from the backyard. Everyone else had the same idea. Though there were far fewer of his friends and neighbors now, the terrifying black creatures were taking them down one by one. Annie's arms were locked around his neck so tight, it was hard to breathe. He got up and sprinted as fast as he could. His heart thumped hard, and he wondered how much longer it could go at this pace before seizing. A woman, the new wife, scampered past them. Her scalp had been peeled forward, a wet flap of her hair hanging over her face. She blindly ran into the dining room table, knocking herself onto her back. That pause was all the monsters needed to finish her. Sprinting through the living room, he spied the front door.
Almost there!
They're right behind us!
Bill got to the door. It was locked. He fumbled for the lock. Something wet and as hard as cement slammed into his arm, severing it at the elbow. He watched as blood paint the walls and door. Suddenly, the weight of Annie was gone. One of the monsters grabbed a thick cord of her hair, yanking her from his grasp. There was just time enough to witness the ferocious feast. Everyone was gone, flayed open and spilling organs. He was so engrossed by the carnage he didn't even feel the mouth clamp onto his face. The key party provided several hours of unadulterated gluttony. The sea serpents ate and ate, grinding bone into digestible powder until there was nothing left but shredded togas and pools of coagulating blood. By the time they were done, they had also grown in height, now well over 5.5 feet tall. Their muscles swelled out, limbs thickening, and they were tired, satiated. They fled from the house, padding out the door, slinking down the dark street and slipping into the sewer. Because all of the surrounding neighbors had been at the key party, there was no one left to report the disturbance to the police.
This sucks if we have to forfeit.
Patrick and David had gotten to the field early. They wanted some extra time to scope the area for any pets. David even brought a collar and leash with him. They had belonged to his dog, Barty. Barty, a super cool Labrador, had lived to hang around the boys, had been hit by a car last year. He had to be put to sleep. David didn't cry, but he wasn't himself for weeks after. Unfortunately, Coach Clay arrived early too. He saw them walking the outfield and made them unload the gear from his trunk. Instead of searching for reward money, they got to take grounders and extra batting practice. Joy.
We'll lose anyway. The Bobcats are undefeated.
David eyed the full team from the next town over.
Yeah, but I'd rather lose playing than just going home. Where's Alan and Chris?
David looked around. The parents of the kids on the Bobcats were in full force on their side of the field. Alan and Chris's parents never missed a game. They were kind of cheesy that way. But they were nowhere to be found today. The umpire was talking with Coach. Patrick didn't like the body language.
That's a forfeit.
Damn.
Patrick tossed his mitt to the ground, kicking up a plume of dirt.
At least now we have more time to look for dogs. And then there's Godzilla.
I heard they're gonna give out free Godzilla comics in the theater.
The ones Marvel puts out?
No, a special one by the movie studio. Could end up being a big-time collectible.
See? Who needs baseball when you have Godzilla and comics?
Boys, help me get everything loaded up.
Coach Clay beckoned the five members of the team that had showed up. He had gone as far as double-A ball for the Cleveland Indians and was still insanely competitive. Since the boys who didn't show weren't around to bear the brunt of his tirade, he took his frustrations out on David, Patrick, and the three other boys, triplets who manned every outfield position.
Why the hell do I even bother?
All of the parents were gone. The field had cleared out pretty quick.
You know how many forfeits I was part of when I played? And I'm talking from Little League all the way to Double A. None! Zero! That's right! It never happened! And you know why? Because we gave a shit! We knew what it meant to be a team! Ugh.
He threw an olive-colored bag of bats at the backstop. The boys flinched. It looked like every bulging vein in his red neck was going to pop like water balloons. The thought of it almost made David chuckle, but he was smart enough to keep a poker face.
This is the most humiliating moment of my baseball career.
One of the triplets, a toe-headed kid named Samson, dared to pipe up.
I thought coaching was voluntary, not a career.
What did you say?
I'll get that bag and put it in the trunk.
He ran like lightning, lugging the heavy bag into the car and taking off on foot, leaving his brothers behind.
Tell your brother he has 10 laps waiting for him next practice.
They nodded, keeping their eyes on the ground.
Get the hell out of here and tell your loser teammates that we got an extra practice Monday night. And if they miss that, they're off the team!
David and Patrick walked home with their bats over their shoulders, gloves hanging off the knobs.
That was total bullshit. Why was he ragging on us? At least we showed up.
He can be a real hammer. Maybe we should go to Alan and Chris's house and find out what happened to them.
Yeah, and then I can chew their butts out like Coach.
Coach Clay stood on the pitcher's mound, staring at the empty outfield, fuming.
A fucking forfeit!
He felt bad for taking it out on the boys, but he could have been so much worse. You didn't know what it was like to get your ass handed to you until you screwed up for a minor league coach. Now that was a pro-level beatdown.
Hey, Coach!
It was Samson. He trotted over from the third base side of the field, a ring of keys on his finger.
I took your keys by accident!
Thanks.
He wanted to say more, to sound more appreciative, but he was still too wound up. Suddenly, there was a smell of garbage. Rotted fish and dirty diapers floated on the breeze. He crinkled his nose. He turned to look at the row of houses behind home plate. Someone must have had a fish fry 2 weeks ago and forgot to bring the pail to the curb. When Coach Clay saw the trio of onyx-colored creatures galloping his way, he joined the boy in screaming. He watched in horror as one of the beasts leaped onto Samson. The coach saw one of the kid's eyes roll out of the mess of gore in the monster's mouth. It hit the dirt, rolling hard and fast until it stopped at his feet. The graying eye looked up at him. There was barely time to look up before. He was tackled by the remaining two. He flailed, a wild punch ending with his fist in one of their mouths. Bear trapped jaws severing it from his wrist. The other bit right into his balls. Blood exploded from his punctured groin. Coach Clay tried to scream again, but no sound would come out. 2 seconds later, he didn't have a mouth or throat anyway. While David changed out of his uniform, Patrick went to Alan and Chris's house. Alan answered the door.
Man, where were you guys? We had to forfeit the game and Coach Clay went berserk.
Chris, younger than Alan by less than a year, they were true Irish twins, sidled up next to his brother.
We couldn't go. We don't know where our parents are.
What, did they run away from home?
They said they were going to a party last night and they never came back. I called my grandfather and he's coming over. He should be here soon.
The smile dropped from Patrick's face.
Oh, that's so weird. I'm sorry.
My grandfather said they're probably just sleeping it off at whatever house they went to, but I have a weird feeling.
Well, let me know when they come home, okay?
Yeah.
Alan and Chris were the loudest kids on the block. It was unsettling seeing them like that. David called over to him from his porch.
Get your butt changed, Bozak. I checked the paper. We can catch the early show if we hurry.
Patrick dipped into the house and got out of his uniform. By the time he met David in the middle of the quiet street, his mind was off his friends and on to the King of Monsters. The Kendall movie theater was only a 3-block walk from their house. It was a little on the worn side, but it had a balcony where you could throw candy from, and the manager didn't much care if you stayed in there all day.
What did Alan and Chris say?
Well, they said their parents are missing.
What?
I know. Weird, right?
I wouldn't mind if my parents disappeared, at least for a few days. But only after my mom shopped, so I'd have a house full of food.
Patrick recalled the look on his friend's face. He wasn't so sure getting a break from his parents would be such a cool thing. The last block to the Kendall was a long, steep hill. Full trees on the corners below obscured the theater. Virginia Avenue was always busy on a Saturday, but it sounded like there was something really big going on.
It's too early for the fair.
The Virginia Avenue Street Fair was an annual classic, but that wasn't going to happen until the very end of summer.
Why is everyone screaming?
The boys slowed their pace. They could hear the commotion loud and clear, but they couldn't make out a damn thing. There were a lot of shops on Virginia Avenue. Suppose one of them got robbed and there was a whole scene going on with hostages and cops and people running for cover. Patrick damned his overactive imagination, but he wasn't imagining those panicked cries.
Maybe we should just go home.
Not before we see what the heck's going on.
David led the way. Patrick reluctantly followed. When the Kendall came into view, they stopped, shocked. Yes, people were running in every direction, but it was what was causing the riot that put the boys' heads in a spin cycle.
What the hell are those things?
The things trying to grab people outside the Kendall were as black as night, with huge mouths. They had strong legs and thick tails, but their arms were small, like a T-Rex's. From here, they looked an awful lot like people in rubber monster suits.
I bet that's part of the promotion for the Godzilla movies. They hired some guys to dress up as monsters and scare the balls off everyone. Too cool.
But wouldn't they just scare people in the theater?
Nah, this way the whole neighborhood is focused on the Kendall. Watch, I bet they tell everyone it's all just for fun. Those same monster guys will be handing out the comics when we go inside.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Nah, I'm always right.
They resumed their pilgrimage to the Holy Kendall, now the scene of the greatest Godzilla double feature promotion of all time, until they spotted Mrs. Gilchrist, their English teacher, stumble into the middle of the street. Her face smacked right off the asphalt. When she lifted her head up, her nose was smashed flat, blood everywhere.
Holy cow!
Now people were getting hurt. She'd end up suing the Kendall, and they'd have no more movie theater.
We should go down there and help her up.
No one was paying attention to the older woman. She was on her knees, staring at the blood on her hands. The boys made it as far as the corner when one of the black creatures grabbed Mrs. Gilchrist from behind, opened its dripping maw, and bit her head clean off. When it pulled away, they stared in horror as blood skyrocketed from the stump of her neck. Patrick grabbed David's shirt, preventing him from taking one step closer.
What the hell?
This was no promotion. In their panic, other people were stumbling over one another. As soon as they fell, a creature was there to pounce on them, taking great hunks of flesh as souvenirs. People were dying. The beasts were feeding on them.
We have to get out of here!
Patrick dragged David with him.
What are those things?
I don't know, but we can't stay here!
The creatures had no visible ears, but one of them must have heard Patrick because it stopped chewing on the back of a man's neck and looked straight at them. It opened its mouth wide. They saw the rows of pointy teeth, the red fleshy tongue. Thick, bloody mucus dripped from its narrow bottom lip. They turned and ran as fast as they could, not daring to look back, not even pausing to vomit, just letting it run freely from their open, gaping mouths as they struggled to get away. First, they ran to David's house.
Mom! Dad! Where are you?
The house was silent. Patrick noticed the note on the table. He picked it up.
Hey, your mother took your father to the doctor. Says they'll be home soon.
David's eyes were as white and round as hard-boiled eggs. He looked like he was about to cry.
He left me?
It's not like they knew what's happening on Virginia Street. Come on, let's go to my house.
When they emerged from David's, it sounded like every police and fire engine was racing toward the carnage outside the Kendall. Thank God, Patrick thought. Despite terrible stitches in their sides, they sprinted to Patrick's house across the street. His father was home, sitting at the kitchen table, eating a ham and cheese sandwich.
Dad, where's Mom?
Out shopping. It's got you two all riled up. You cause whatever all those sirens are running to?
Wow. A talk show about financial investing played on the palm-sized transistor radio that never left his father's side. Patrick couldn't stop himself from blurting out everything in one long run-on sentence. David just nodded assent next to him.
Whoa. Slow down. Did you just say monsters are eating people outside the Kendall?
Yes!
His father shook his head, then took another bite of his sandwich.
I may be old to you, but I'm not senile. Nice try.
Patrick pulled on his dad's arm, making him drop the sandwich on the floor.
Oh, thank you for ruining my lunch.
He swiped his food off the floor and tossed it into the garbage.
We're not lying and we're not kidding. That's why all the cops are headed down there. These things are everywhere and they're attacking everyone.
Even Patrick's father couldn't deny the constant bleeding of emergency responders.
What's going on down there?
He stepped out onto the porch.
You guys stay here. I'm gonna check it out.
Patrick jumped in front of him.
Don't go! It's not safe!
You kids stay inside. I'll be right back.
But Dad, the monsters!
Ugh,
Enough about that. I told you, go in the house and wait for me. You got that?
Patrick saw there was no convincing him or stopping him. His father worked as an emergency medical technician in the city. He was drawn to sirens and bad stuff. He just had no idea how bad this really was.
Can you please take your car?
Fine. Now do what I said.
They watched him get back in the Buick Century and head down the block. Patrick figured once his dad saw the rampaging monsters, he would turn right back and lock the house down. He was wrong. They never saw his father again.
I don't hear any more shooting.
The sirens were still going strong. Most of the parents had gone to see what was happening, leaving the kids behind. They stood on porches and front lawns, staring down the street. No one spoke to one another. There was an air of dread that held their tongues. Here were all the kids they played ball with, and the little kids they had fun ignoring. It was as if they were all strangers to one another. David couldn't stop looking in the other direction, waiting for his parents' pacer to come around the corner. None of the adults were coming back.
What do we do?
We can't call the police. Who else is there?
The army?
Doesn't the president have to call the army?
I don't know.
David looked around.
Oh, this is freaking me out.
Wait, I see someone.
Sure enough, they spotted a man running, his arms flailing. It looked like he was having a hard time keeping on his feet. The closer he got, the more the boys were able to make out. His face was awash in blood. His shirt was torn down the middle, revealing a jagged line of flayed flesh.
It's Mr. Gilligan.
Mr. Gilligan was their friend Jimmy's father. He was a bit older than the other fathers, but he was always friendly and never complained about them going into his yard for foul balls or frisbees. Now, he looked insane, desperate to flee the terror of what was happening down at the Kendall.
Help! Help!
All of the kids were rooted to their spots. How could a kid help an adult, especially one that looked to be hurt real bad? Only Jimmy ran to him. His father saw him.
Get back, Jimmy! Back in the house!
Oh, shit!
One of those creatures ambled into view. It was following the trail of blood left behind by Mr. Gilligan. It loped, kind of like that hunchback from the Frankenstein movies, but it never slowed its pace. Its mouth kept opening and closing, as if it could really taste Mr. Gilligan. Jimmy must have seen it too. He turned back towards his house. His father was right behind him.
Everyone, get inside and lock your doors!
David shouted to the kids. They didn't need to be told twice. He and Patrick were on a high porch. They were the last to heed his own advice.
What can we do?
David was about to answer, I don't know, when the monster lunged forward, tackling Mr. Gilligan. He then fell into Jimmy. With both of them sprawled on the sidewalk, the onyx monstrosity crawled over them, dipped his head, and started tearing at their flesh. Patrick clamped his hand over his ears. David knew it was pointless. They'd heard too much already. They would never not hear those screams in their heads. He grabbed Patrick by the elbow and went inside.
Come on, we have to lock up.
Yeah, windows too.
While Patrick locked the door, David shut the windows and flipped the latches. It was going to get very hot very fast. They lifted the blinds and watched the creature feast on their friend. Jimmy's body shook as it wrestled a hunk of meat from his exposed back.
What is that thing?
As it ate, it seemed to grow even bigger, the body filling out more, its lashing tail getting thicker, longer.
You should get your camera.
Why?
So we have proof.
They're everywhere. Their bodies are proof.
I just want to be able to get a closer look.
Something gnawed at the back of his brain. Patrick reluctantly got his Polaroid. It was one of the good ones with a telezoom lens. David opened the window, then the screen. He leaned out as far as he could without falling. Every inch he could get closer was valuable. His finger found the button for the telezoom lens. Suddenly, he could see the monster as clear as day. He handed the photo back to Patrick, then took another, and another. Patrick had the pictures laid out on the living room table. As much as it repulsed him to look, David studied the photos, the last one still developing. He ran his hands over the stubble on his head.
Oh man, I think I know what they are. Is it gone?
Patrick stood vigil by the window. He kept the blinds closed, cracking two slats just enough to spy between them.
Yeah, it took off when there was nothing left of Jimmy or his father.
Let me see.
Patrick stepped back so David could take a look. He saw all that was left was a red stain on the ground. Even their clothes had been eaten. David looked like he was going to be sick.
We have to get to my house.
I kind of want to be here when my mother comes home.
Bozak, you know word has gotten out about what happened on Virginia Avenue. The state police probably have all the roads to this area blocked off. If she went shopping at the mall, there's no way they're letting her back here.
David hoped he was right. That was a far better thing to consider than the alternative. He just knew his father wasn't all right. He couldn't have gone down there in the thick of things without getting hurt or worse. He'd been trying hard not to cry this whole time, but a tear still leaked out from his right eye.
What's so important that we have to go to your house?
I have to check something. You'll think I'm crazy.
After what we just saw, nothing's crazy.
Plus, my house has fewer windows and doors. It's way more secure.
Ever since they had seen Dawn of the Dead, they pictured ways to fortify every home, store, and building from zombies. These things weren't zombies, but it was even more important to be in as safe a place as possible.
I'm not going out there without a weapon.
Your dad have a gun?
Not that I know of.
Then we'll just have to improvise.